The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
It does. Settles in your soul.
Amen.
Isn't that right, Wim?
It is. We are right. Yes, yes, yes.
Morning, everybody. Terry Raposa and Wim Carpenter.
Howdy, howdy.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing better than I deserve.
Oh, okay. I think we all are.
Yep.
That noise you hear is Wim playing with his microphone. It seems to be going up and down on him, just of its own accord.
Yep.
We're broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading. 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, we're streaming live. For all you folks out there that want to hear us live, at KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com, we're your talk radio.
Hey, before we get going, let's announce this spaghetti dinner so we don't forget it in the course of the...
Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket?
Yes, sir. Okay, there's going to be a spaghetti dinner. And it's for the Northern California Veterans Support Group. It's going to be held on September 28th at the Anderson VFW Hall at 3210 West Center Street in Anderson from 4 to 7 p.m. Adults are $15, veterans $13, kids in 12 and under are $10. And for tickets and or donations, please call 530-356-3651. And there you have it.
And we have Patrick Jones and Lori Jones here today with us to continue our soiree for liberty.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, and last week we had quite a show. If you didn't listen to last week's show, you need to. Patrick brought forth some information that all of us need to know in our county. And also, I think people all through California, these are some things that are happening that are pretty universal amongst the county. So, Patrick, maybe you can catch us up a little bit on what you talked about last Sunday. Give us kind of what you talked about in a nutshell, if you could.
Yeah, and so the Centers for Tech and Civic Life, and the reason why I'm talking about this particular issue so much, one, is that it's not attorney-client privileged information, and so many times we have information that I would like to share, but I cannot. And so this particular cover-up had no protection, and so I'd like to talk about it and let the public know just exactly what the ROV did to the Shasta County Board of Supervisors and what kind of malfeasance occurred. And it's also kind of a good time because Mark Zuckerberg, founder and CEO of Facebook, has recently come out and admitted that the $400 million that he has donated to election departments was, in fact, used for partisan policies.
You don't say.
Yeah, and he said he regrets it. I believe him.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he regrets it. he regrets getting caught.
I believe him very much that he regrets.
I'm sorry.
And now, 29 states knew better, and they banned this type of money coming into their election department because they knew that it was trying to influence policies for certain demographics and to get the vote out for certain people, but not for other people. Mm. 29 states banned it. The rest of the states, like California, accepted that money. And in February of 2023, Shasta County accepted $1.5 million from the Centers for Tech and Civic Life. Now, this is the group that Zuckerberg funnels the money to, and then they know the different ROVs throughout the country, which ones would be friendly and which amounts of money to give. You know, certain counties would get more than others. Now, we got a fairly substantial amount. Now, on that particular day when it came up, I voted no. I didn't want to take this money, and Supervisor Kelstrom voted no. Supervisor Garmin and Supervisor Rickard both wanted the money with the strings attached. Supervisor Cry at the time wanted the money without the string. So he made a counterproposal and said, hey, if we, we're going to do a counterproposal, this money comes into our account. It can't be taken back. And it's for the purchase of a building only, because we lease a building right now for $15,000 a month. So we're throwing away a lot of money downtown Reading with just the elections department. That motion, that substitute motion, that counter motion was approved on a 3-2 vote, and it was sent off to the Centers for Tech and Civic Life, or at least it should have been. And so I asked our acting CEO Mary Mary Williams. About a month later, hey, did that counter proposal get accepted? And I didn't think they would, right? With those strings, you know, that doesn't do them any good.
You're assuming no.
Right. Yeah. And so she said no, it hadn't been accepted. And I asked a little bit later. In fact, I'd asked a total of three times, did the counter proposal get accepted? And each time it was no. Well, what had occurred, and once we uncovered 174 emails, is that our counter proposal did not get sent forward.
The one that the board approved?
The board approved.
And authorized the staff to send forward.
So that was rewritten.
By staff.
By Kathy Allen and Joanna Francisca.
Okay, those two people for sure. Okay.
Yeah, and their names are on the emails. And each time, so now there's 174 emails. So what are they talking about in those 174 emails?
Right.
So what happened was ROV Allen would come on and say, hey, we're going to rewrite it. It doesn't have to go to the board. And Council Ross would come on and say, no, it needs to go back to the board if you're going to rewrite it. Well, if we write it this way, it doesn't have to go back to the board, right? And Council Ross again would come back on and say, no, if you rewrite it, it has to go back to the board. 10 times Council had advised the ROV that it needed to go back to the board. It did not go back to the board. It was, in fact, rewritten. And we have the emails with ROV Allen and assistant ROV Francesca. Their names are on those emails. And so they knew exactly what they were doing. It's certainly malfeasance. And then they sent that counter proposal off to the Centers for Tech and Civic Life. Now, Joanna Francisca sits on that committee. She sits on the Centers for Civic Life and Civic Tech. And Life.
Okay, so the money.
So she already knew.
She knew because she's on the board.
She's on the board, right? She's not on the board today, but she was at that time.
She was at that time.
Yeah.
And how much longer was she on the board after that occurred?
Don't know the exact timeline there, but I just know when you look up the Centers for Tech and Civic Life, you see her picture on the website. And she was on there, and she now is not. So probably somewhere later 2023, she probably dropped off of that, or maybe early 24.
Knowing that she was going to run for ROV.
Probably. And so the whole year of 2023, we did not know, the board did not know that counter proposal was rewritten and accepted. We didn't know, so they accepted the breach of contract, because that's what it is. It's not our contract, and it was a breach of contract, but they accepted it, and then we were informed in 2024 that, hey, this is time sensitive, we need to get on this, and I'm saying, well, get on what? They hadn't approved our counter proposal. Well, they didn't approve our counter proposal. It was Kathy Allen's proposal and Joanna's proposal, and the acting CEO, Mary Williams, knew full aware about it, because they are friends. There's no mistake that Mary Williams and Kathy Allen are friends, and she was the CEO.
Yeah, Mary Williams resigned, didn't she?
She resigned, and of course, Council Ross has resigned. Matt McCumber resigned. Ruben Cruz resigned. Kathy Allen resigned. Mary Williams resigned. Shelley Forbes resigned. We had lots of resignations.
So did they see the writing on the wall or what?
Well, I mean, these are the kinds of things that were going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And this is just one issue that I can talk about. There are others, and at some point maybe I will be able to talk about the other things that were going on behind.
Even if they've left their position, wasn't it still a crime? Can they still be, I mean, since they're gone, of course, Francesca's not gone.
Right, there's one still remaining. And
what about the ones that are gone? When you jump ship, are you...
Yeah, I mean, when you have a breach of contract, I mean, really, I think specifically for elected like Kathy Allen, I think that should really go to the grand jury, and they should hold her accountable for that, and then they will lay a course of action that the board could approve.
Okay. Well, the long arm of the law should be able to reach out and tap each one of them on the shoulder and do all kinds of stuff.
And you know, it's kind of shocking, right? Because when the board makes a decision, whether it's a liberal board or a conservative board, staff carries that out, right? That's what they do. That's what they're paid to do. But in this particular case and others, that's not what they were doing.
They overstepped, you think?
They were very deliberate. Yeah. And you know, what's interesting about this particular Centers for Tech and Civic Life is that, as I've been talking about it, not one person has disputed it. The emails are very clear.
Wow.
They are public. You can take a look at them, and not a single person has disputed these facts. And so, pretty shocking. And today I'm going to have something even bigger than that. I'm going to let the public. I basically have a very shocking incident within the DA's office, and that's why I'm here today.
This is like Christmas.
Is to start talking about the covered up investigation that I uncovered and we made public. And so it was probably, you know, it was 2023, probably mid-year, and our new CEO, Dave Rickert, came on board, and we're really happy to have him. And he interviewed very well, and everybody really liked him. He was selected for our CEO. Well, he was only on the job maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and I was passing through a hall up on the third floor, and he said, hey, and I was chair at the time, he said, hey, the DA investigation is wrapping up. And I said, I'm not familiar with any DA investigation. Now, he assumed I would know, right? Because normally when you would have a big investigation, the chair would be knowledgeable of that, or at least the whole entire board. Well, I said, Dave, I haven't, I'm not familiar with that. He goes, well, probably talk to Director of Support Services, Monica Fugit. And so I did. So I went over and saw Monica, and I said, hey, Dave says something about a DA investigation wrapping up. And she goes, yeah, we're wrapping it up. And I said, well, why have I not heard of it? And she goes, well, because we don't tell you about them. And she goes, we just kind of had a policy where we don't tell the board about any investigation.
We have a policy that we keep stuff from the board.
Yeah, and I said, well.
Interesting.
I said, that's going to change. And so today, investigations will be ran by the entire board, and any investigation with regards to a department head or an elected official will be made public. Now, there may be certain things redacted to protect certain individuals by law, but those will be made public. And so I took a look at this. I told Monica, I guess I should see the report. Is there a report? And she goes, yeah, there's a 47-page report. And I said, okay, I'd like to take a look at that. So I go to, I can't remember if it was Ross. It was probably Ruben Cruz at the time. I think he was still there before he resigned. And I said, well, I'd like to see that. And he goes, well, you can't take it to your office. You have to come to my office, and I have to watch you as you go through this. And I said, really? And actually, it was I think it was actually Matt McCumber by that time.
Yeah.
And so first he comes in with a redacted.
So Matt McCumber was the attorney at that
time. Yeah, I think Ross had already resigned. Cruz had already resigned. Okay. Matt was still there, Matt McCumber. But he resigned shortly thereafter, but he was still there at that time. And and there was one.
Plague. Jump the ship.
And so he comes in with a redacted one. I said, no, Matt, no redacted. Give me the full one. So he returns with the full report. And so I start going through it. And so what had happened was a whistleblower had come forward and had said that 80 to 90% of her time was spent in 2022 working on the reelection campaign for Stephanie Bridget, the DA.
80 to 90%
That will be on page 26 if you would like to look, and that report is made available.
Wow.
80 to 90%. Now, she could be lying, right? Mm-hmm. It's possible she could be lying. Some whistleblowers come forward, and they may not be honest. But I believe in this case, the facts will prove her to be correct, and we'll get into those facts a little bit later. And so as I read through this thing, the DA, the current DA, Stephanie Bridget, admits to using the office and some of her time campaigning.
Ruh-roh.
And of course, for those of us that were active and watching elections as we do today and as I did in 2022, we saw many members of her staff at a lot of the campaign events.
Mm-hmm.
And we all just assumed that they were off the clock or things like that, right? But then we witnessed things during the daytime where they should be working. should be on the clock, but they're at different things. They're in the boardroom. They're at campaign events. There's, it seems to be a lot of them. I don't know how many, but there seems to be a lot of them. And then I witnessed with my own eyes, an event, where it, I didn't even know the person's name, but I knew they worked within the DA's office. And so I saw it firsthand, as well. And, so this report was concluded and said, well, yes, there are sustained allegations. However, they're incidental, so nothing to look at here. And so essentially, I would have never known about the report. It would have just simply been, put in a binder, put on a shelf somewhere.
Collecting dust.
The board would not know about it. Yep. But because we had an honest CEO for a change mm-hmm. that instructed me of it, as I should have, then it became, available to me. And then we made it public. The board voted to make that public. And that's why I can talk about it, is because we made that report, public. And as you go through the report, you'll see on page 28 that separate laptop computers, 350 emails to the effect. I have not seen those emails. Page 37, the DA says, yes, could have been campaign activities on the county premise. Page 38, yes, we did some strategizing. Sustained allegations on page 46. A variety of different things that, you know, people are welcome to take a look at in that report. We made that report public, and, the newspaper kind of downplayed it. And again, there wasn't a lot of meat in it because of the investigation, and how they did it. And they basically said, yes, there's some sustained allegations, but, incidental, I think that's the word that the lawyers like to use. But recently what we have uncovered, because we keep hearing radio ads that the DA says that there's not enough courtrooms, there's not enough judges, and cases are being dismissed. And so we were getting pretty upset with that, because the fact of the matter is there is enough courtrooms and there is enough judges. But something
– And you are drawing that conclusion from?
From the courts, it's from them, from the judges themselves.
Wow.
And there's a couple judges particularly that she will not go in front of. But because we started hearing recently, currently, about these cases being dismissed, and there's some pretty high-profile cases that are upsetting the public, we took a look at the last several years of the caseloads for all counties in California, all counties. And in 2022, something very interesting occurred. So most counties, if you were a large county, say, had like 15,000 cases, typically your DA's office would get through, 14,800 of them, right? You'd get the lion's share.
14,000 in a year?
Well, for a large county, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so when you're a large county, you may have 15,000 cases
a
year.
Holy cow. Okay.
And you'll have the staff to be able to handle it, and you get through about 14,800 of them, right? You get the lion's share of them.
Okay.
And big counties, you see that trend where they get the lion's share. There's only a few that they don't get to throughout the course of the year. Smaller counties like us that have maybe 1,000 to 1,500 cases. If you had 1,500 cases, you'd get through maybe 1,450 of them. If you had 1,000, you'd get through 970 of them,
okay.
Right?
So gotcha.
The trend through all the counties.
So the percentage is about the same through all?
Yeah, all the counties, you see a very similar percent. They get through the lion's share of them, with the exception of Shasta County. Okay. Shasta County had 1,500 cases in 2022, but completed only 700.
Holy mackerel.
So over 800 cases were dismissed, and it coincides with the activity that what we saw. And that activity was not incidental. This was a major operation that the DA was running her campaign out of her office and not getting her work done, to the tune of more than half your work is not being done, which means probably that more than half of your staff is working on the campaign. And the facts are clear that she – and this was the only county that had a massive decline in cases or in completed cases that were dismissed. Those cases are still plaguing Shasta County to this day, and they've been extremely harmful to our residents, where justice needed to be upheld, and it was not. But that was how desperate the DA was, because she was going to lose that race. And in fact, she even said as much.
Really?
She said that if we don't work on this hard, we're not going to have our jobs in a roundabout way.
So she forced everybody into compliance to help her do her campaign, but by scaring them into doing
and we know we have at least one whistleblower that says 80 to 90% of her time was campaigning, and then when you only see that you've completed 800 or 700 cases out of 1,500,
wow.
It's 40%. Very
I know
clear.
That when we were at the Board of Supervisor meetings, it seemed as if there was a lot of people from the DA's office that were in there all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I counted one day, there was over half a dozen.
Well, and it's clear that they're not getting their work done.
Don't they work, man?
Now, they could have been doing something else, right?
Yeah.
But what are the odds that that half your work is being dismissed? You've got a whistleblower coming forward that says we've used a lot of our time campaigning, which is illegal. That's misuse of public funds. It's against our policies. 800 cases out there. Now, several attorneys have come forward to me, and there's no client privilege to these conversations in this particular case, and have been making these accusations for quite some time that there was a ton of cases dismissed. They're still being dismissed, not in that number, but clearly there is a problem within the DA's office about getting before certain judges that we have, and there's something that they're afraid of, and why they continue to not want to have cases heard from several specific judges. Sooner or later, the DA will be held accountable. For me, the outrageous behavior of this DA in 2022, to me, is shocking. The public should be aware of this. They're not. But they're going to be.
Well, we're fixing to make them aware of it.
Yeah, we're going to get the information out. And this information should have come out a lot earlier. But the problem was within the county staff and our council, we had some very bad actors. That's different today. We have good counsel today with the head of the department, with Joe Larmer, and being fair and honest and open and transparent. But that's not what we had in the past. And the fact that this investigation was almost covered up, and in fact, it was within a week or two of just that happening. It would eventually have been found out because of so many cases, 800 cases being dismissed. And so what you saw was before the 2022 primary, the workload went down considerably because they weren't doing their job. And then the dismissals rapidly went up after the election. They had no choice. The facts are clear. The data is there. It's undeniable. And the DA, without regards to what would happen to the community, what would happen to the county, she took this action to save her seat, because she was going to be beaten, and I believe she was beat by Eric Jensen. And
so, what about the one particular case that we all know about that came forward that was rushed in there? You know, the Zapata case. Why would she take that case versus something else that's out there that's potentially getting dismissed, that there was some real harm done to somebody?
Well,
how does she balance that?
Yeah, and then of course, that was a very much a political decision,
right,
that she made.
Right.
The county wasted over $400,000 for a spilt glass of water.
Right.
Do you think that's a good decision?
Absolutely not.
Probably not. And the amount of time and effort that took. Now you're not getting to your other cases that are more serious, when you have murderers and rapists. And,
right.
They had three DAs on that case. They also had assistant DAs. They also had bodyguards for them in and out of the courtroom. They were escorted in and escorted out.
For the ADAs, they had bodyguards?
Yeah. They were escorted in and escorted out.
Wow.
You know, to me, in looking at that, and we're going to have to go to our break here, I want to find out. When we get back, as I'm sure a lot of the listeners are going to want to find out, what happens next? Because the corruption we have here with this DA is just unbelievable. And I think she has, what, another 4 years in office because her term got extended to six rather than four. So we're going to go off for our break. And when we get back, we want to talk a little bit about that because this is amazing. Time has come.
For 51.
You think?
Get her done.
Amen.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
As a thank you for your outstanding service, Wind River Resort and Casino would like to honor you with our Military Monday promotion. Join us every Monday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. to receive your dining discounts and free slot play. Active or retired military members can present their military ID at the River Club to be entered into this weekly promotion. For more details, download the Wind River app or visit windriver.com. Find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Mimi Mosley here from Mosley Family Sellers. We'd just like to thank Redding Rancheria for their generous gift to us. It was so helpful and helped to keep us alive.
Hi, I'm Shelby Mahara with Squishy Doodle Face Painting, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support. They always help the community and always help to take care of us when they can.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Again at Jefferson State of Mind, and we're here with Patrick Jones, his lovely wife, Lori, and we were talking about just, I don't know, can you use the word alleged corruption?
Yeah, I mean,
pretty close, huh?
You know, we were paying very close attention. The primary in 2022 was very important. We had the DA up for reelection. We had the sheriff. We had the superintendent of schools. We had the ROV. We had two supervisors. So we had six races that were very important here locally. And it was most likely the most expensive campaign time that we've ever seen with all the monies that were being raised on both sides. And specific to, and I was watching very closely, the Eric Jensen, and I did not know Eric prior to this, but I had a few sit-downs with him, and I really liked his views and his very staunch constitutional look at things.
Yeah.
And he's come from Orange County, and they have a stronghold of conservatives there, like we do here. And he got off to a very early start, and people were very receptive to that. And I'm assuming that the DA probably assumed that she would run unopposed. And I think the ROV kind of felt that way too, because that's often what happens, right? They often run unopposed in those positions. And so Eric Jensen got out a good start, good-looking guy, well-spoken, articulate, really had a passion for Shasta County and for the work that needs to be done at the DA's office. And because he got out in such a lead, it was clear for those of us that were paying attention that Stephanie Bridget was behind. And I think that's what motivated her to use her staff, allegedly. But she, again, admitted it, so it's not alleged. She admitted to using the building, and a whistleblower came forward to say that they were using 80-90% of their time, you know. And again, you take a look at the statistics of the cases that were dropped, and it coincides with exactly what we saw. And it coincides with what the whistleblower has said. And unfortunately, it was close to being covered up. 2 weeks later, it would have been. But as chair, I caught wind of it, read the report, sustained allegations, and some allegations were not. It was kind of he said, she said, but certainly other allegations where the DA admits that she did use you know, time that she was getting paid for by you, the taxpayer, campaigning. And she said she was compelled to do so. Well, I'd be compelled too, but she was behind, and that was the reason that she had to push forward. And but again, you don't break policies or laws and misuse public funds. But in this case, 800 cases got dismissed.
Out of 1,500.
Out of 1,500. And yeah. Nowhere in the state has that ever occurred from the statistics I've seen for the last, you know, 5 years. Most of the counties get their work done. The county and the public should be outraged that in 2022, 800 cases were dismissed. That is outrageous. And they should be furious, and they should hold this DA accountable.
How do we do that?
And I believe in time that will happen.
Okay.
So there are certainly continued efforts that this is not done, where we've only begun to talk about it. And then the next step here for me is most likely let's take a look at those 800 cases. Let's see what exactly was dismissed and what harm it did. And I want to go through every single case. And then we'll see at the end of that if this DA wants to contest that.
That's a huge undertaking, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, come January, I'll have a little free time.
And so, there you go.
I'm sure you'll get help.
Yeah.
You know,
but there are also quite a few attorneys that are upset about this. And this is where a lot of this information also it coincides with what we saw, the statistics of the cases being dropped, and what these attorneys have been saying for quite a while. You know, the cases are being dismissed, and it's not right.
So it's a full circle story.
Right.
Here.
I mean, all arrows are pointing to what happened in 2022, and the whistleblower report that is public.
Right.
It all points to that time period that the work was not getting done because she was using her staff to campaign, and it looks pretty clear. And so we will hold her accountable. And you know, she's far from retirement, so she's not ready to retire yet. Mm-hmm. You know, but this lack of doing her job is so outrageous in 2022 alone, and there probably will be more. But just looking at 2022, you know, to me is an offense that no one should be able to be allowed to do. And I've never seen a DA not do half of their work.
Right.
When the percentages you were giving us, if it was 1,500 using the percentages you gave us, 1,480 should have been done. So, right. I mean, the percentage is insane. I mean, it's less than half. That's just insanity. I mean, I ain't got the words.
Well,
it's just unbelievable.
And
the
reason why I believe this report that was done, and the person that did it, I won't say, but it's an investigator the county uses. The reason why I believe that it was incorrect was because if you just simply took a look, the reason why I say it was incorrect because while sustained allegations, but incidental, that word incidental, but when you look at the number of cases that were dropped, 800, how could you say it was incidental?
Yeah.
So in that regard, this report was a cover-up. It covered up the real facts.
Right.
You know, if you dropped, 20 or 30 cases, that might, out of 1,500, that's incidental.
Right.
But when you drop more than half of your cases, it's not incidental. So the person that did this report was attempting to cover it up. Now, why would you do that? Well, because they use this person all the time. Right? And if you want to do more work, because it's an outside counsel, if you want more work, you need to deliver what the counsel at the time wanted, right?
Right.
There's the goalpost. Here's where you're at. You need to get over there. So make the stuff in between.
Make it happen, yeah.
Make it. So,
yeah.
And that's what it appeared with this. And the fact that only 700 cases were completed during that time period, any investigator that was worth having would quickly say, we've got a serious problem here. This is more than incidental. There is a sense of nervousness, I find, with people when you want to take on the DA. When there's wrongdoing with the DA, people tend to be kind of shy. The DA can be fairly powerful, they can misuse their power.
Clearly.
And she did here in 2022, no question. I don't think Shasta County attorneys at that time, which have resigned, I believe partially from this, but partial other things. And in time, I will talk about some of these other cases where we have entire cases that were withheld from the board, including me. Entire cases. That's the kind of legal counsel that we had.
And they no longer work for the county.
They've all resigned. Right.
Now, do they work in other counties, or do you know?
They work. I don't know if they work in counties. I don't know where all of them have scattered, but they have fled. This area, and that may catch them as well.
Well,
and
they should be disbarred for some of these actions.
Yeah, no, it's clear that some of their actions, and I think that's why they left, because there was very little. They just abruptly left, right?
Right.
And a lot of the stuff was not seen until we started to see this stuff uncovered in January of 2023. Now, that was a significant day in Shasta County's history. Significant because I became chair. You should have never let that happen. And we got two conservatives, real conservatives,
right,
to join me on the board so that we actually have a majority.
Right.
That has not happened. The past people on that board, the majority has always been liberal, no matter you have an R or a D.
Yep.
It didn't matter if you look at those votes. And so
you still have two of them.
Correct. They're still there. Both, I believe, will be gone by January with this upcoming election. One certainly will be gone, and I believe the other will as well. I think the voters have had enough and have seen through it.
I hope so.
But these attorneys could be disbarred for the behavior.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Go ahead.
So they could be disbarred for their behaviors. Mm-hmm. And these are just the ones that we know about.
Right.
Right. What other investigations took place? Good or bad, that we did not know about, right?
Mm-hmm.
How far are we going to go back on this? How far needs to go back? Probably for a while.
For a while, yeah,
for
absolutely.
A while. And You know, and unfortunately, you know, with the grand jury, I've often wondered, you know, how come the grand juries have never had any teeth? Right? It seems like on certain issues, they really should have had a teeth. But then when you have counsel like we have going over there instructing them, no wonder nothing ever gets happened. You know, nothing ever happens. The worst thing that ever had happened, or the toughest actions that I think the grand jury has taken in recent times, is to find Leonard Modi guilty of misfeasance.
Right.
Which I don't even know what that is.
Hey, it's made up. Attorney told me he'd never heard of it before.
Yeah, you know, instead of malfeasance. It should have been malfeasance.
What is misfeasance?
But I suspect that was a term that Ruben Cruz created for the grand jury at that time.
For protection of their own,
You know, and so, and if you don't root this stuff out, it continues to happen.
Right.
And so, you know, the media has said there is an exodus of people leaving Shasta County. That is true. But they, in most cases, not all of the cases, but in most cases, you had some bad actors. Mm-hmm. Now, some have just, like Paul Hellman, resource director, left to go get a higher paying job so that he can spike his salary in the last couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. That's common. Our fire chief has done that in the past. I've seen other people do that where they move on, anywhere for a couple of years so that they get that extra $30,000-$40,000 a year. So I don't blame them for that. I'm just disappointed because, you know, I care about Shasta County, and so I want to stay here, you know, and it's not just the money. It's why I turned down the CalPERS retirement. I wasn't wasn't that I didn't want that money, but that system is a train wreck, and I didn't want to be responsible. I didn't want to continue. I didn't want to aggravate, and add to a system that is broken.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that they did not heed our advice back some 22 years ago,
right,
when these new formulas were laid out. That is costing the county today, just to give you an idea, to pay for these unfunded or underfunded liabilities. I think the pensions are only 70% funded. We're having to take out roughly around $30 million a year out of the general fund to pay these off, and they'll get paid off some year down the road, some 30 to 40 years down the road, if nothing bad happens. Now, we know in that time period, you're going to see recessions.
Right.
You might even see a depression, so those numbers aren't accurate. It will go longer than that. And if you see a real depression, then you could probably double the length of time, or you could see this fail. You know, because they didn't address it when they needed to.
Well, what about, you know, some of these bad actors that are in CalPERS? Are they going to forego their retirement when they're found criminal with their actions during the time that they're earning that money in Shasta County?
Yeah, so if you are, you know, if it goes...
They're going to lose their retirement.
If something goes before the grand jury and you are found guilty of malfeasance, then a series of things can come into play where that could possibly be the case. That's why you see people resign, right? Because they don't want the full investigation to come, so they jump ship prior.
Right.
And again, not all of our department heads have left in that manner.
Right.
Some have. Others have just simply taken other jobs. Mm-hmm. We did fire two for different reasons. And you know, one of the best things for me was that, you know, when we fired Karen Ranstrom, and I'm not going to get into the details. She was just simply fired without cause, and there are reasons for that. It's a personnel issue, so I can't talk about the details of that.
Right.
But the act of firing a person let people know that you could get fired. And that was a good thing.
Yes.
And it kind of lets you know that if the board is unhappy with you for whatever reasons, they can fire you, because before that wasn't happening. And that kind of created a sense of these guys can fire you, mm-hmm. right? And most of the time you get the cushy government job and you stay there until as long as you want. And this new and keep in mind, she was fired before Chris and Kevin came on, and mm-hmm. And so an interesting situation there. Once Supervisor Kellstrom and Supervisor Cry came on, now you have a conservative board, And with my experience in government, we started to address a whole variety of different issues and start uncovering a variety of these problems.
Right, right.
And things that had not been addressed.
You know, when we talk about the grand jury, we had talked to a mutual friend who's a father,
yep,
a friend who moved to Texas.
Yep, yep.
Older gentleman who
was in law for many years, judge.
And he was a judge. I mean, this guy could pick fly poop out of pepper.
Yes,
he was very detailed.
Very detailed.
He said that the grand jury in Shasta County is sort of beholden to the county council, who is beholden to the DA's office. In other words, the county council goes to the DA to get the advice.
Yep.
To come back to the grand jury, and then the grand jury sort of just rolls with that. I don't know if that's still the case. I don't know if that's...
Yeah, no, it's very similar. And when I was with the city of Reading, you saw the same thing. The city manager would come over, you know, with the city attorney, and they would instruct or have talks with the grand jury and get them from wherever they were to over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a situation in the city of Reading where we had a $400 million gas purchase, where we paid twice the market rate. So we basically blew $200 million on the backs of the ratepayers. And I went before the grand jury with that information, and it was solid. And there was a whistleblower there, and nothing happened. They said, "Well, it's an active case, and so we can't touch that." And what a shame, because of the illegal activities that the city was doing at that time. Speculation of public funds at that time was definitely illegal, and there was no way we were using that amount of gas to run our power plants. We would have to have 10 times the size of power plants to need that amount of gas. So I haven't had a lot of faith, unfortunately, in the grand jury. And so I think it's just simply going to be up to the public pressure on this particular case with the DA. And clearly to me, in my opinion, it was so outrageous using her staff to run her campaign.
Yeah.
And when you only complete 700 cases out of 1,500, she'll have to explain that, right? She's going to have to be held accountable and as to how did that happen.
Because
that was the only county, this was the only county that that happened in.
Mm-hmm.
And we specifically watched her get behind in that race early on. She was way behind. She was going to get beat unless something could occur.
Right.
And the public, now that they're aware of it, we're going to continue to make the public aware of it in whatever form that we can.
Mm-hmm.
And we're tired of hearing excuses from this DA saying there's not enough judges and cases are being dismissed. That has got to stop. They need to get their job done.
And there's somebody that manages all the judges, so they would know if there's not enough judges, and that would be a quick, easy call to make, right?
It's already been made.
Yeah, oh, that's what I figure. The people need to understand that. There's somebody that takes care of that.
So in this community, in this legal community, it's known, and so it's just the public is unaware of what's happening. And, you know, this report, for example, this cover-up report that the county did, you know, the public kind of sees that, but it's only a part of it, right?
Sure.
And it isn't the full story.
Right.
And so as one of my good friends always says, it'll come out in the wash.
There you go. Wow.
You know, just the fact that, you know, you know, this is the first time, you know, in my life, in my political career, starting in January of 2023, where I was working with staff, right, being open and transparent and working with them. When I first got on the Shasta County Board of Supervisors in 2021, I was elected in 2020, got on January 1st, 2021. I had one meeting with Matt Pontus, and when I left that two-hour meeting, I said, you know, the way that I am going to judge you in your performance reviews is how well you keep me informed. You keep me informed, it's good for the county, it's good for my district. That was the only meeting we ever had.
You only had one meeting the entire time he was there?
Yeah, a year and a half.
Wow.
Now,
We did have a question about the Zog fire and the distribution of funds. Is that something that is sort of a moot point at this time, or is there anything happening with that?
Yeah, I mean, when the DA allocated those funds, You know, and a good chunk of it did go to fire departments and such. Only a little bit, 200,000 went to IGO. But what really got people's attention is that $7 or $8 million to the children's, to the Children's Legacy Center that had nothing to do with the Zog fire. Our former acting CEO, Mary Williams, just got hired over there. Our former support services director, Shelley Ford, just got hired over there.
My goodness.
Stephanie Bridget, the DA herself, sits on that board. Just, at that point, that just seemed outrageous, right? That you wouldn't give that money. If they'd have given it to IGO, we would have never really looked at the detail
right.
of the Zog fire.
Right.
So I wasn't paying that much attention to the settlement portion. We've had some pretty serious fires that have really affected lives. Mm-hmm. The important thing or the tragic thing that happened in the Zog fire, besides the loss of property and the allocation, was that we had 4 deaths.
Right.
And
right.
What was so upsetting as we got into this, after we saw this misuse of funds to the Children's Legacy Center, then we really started seeing that, hey, there was no prosecution on manslaughter for these 4 deaths. And so what happened was the deputy DA at the time, Ben Hanna, was in charge of this case.
He's a judge now, right?
He is a judge now.
Oh.
He was he was the deputy DA at the time. He was moving through this case, and when it got time to present evidence, and there was a report that 2 Western pines or gray pines were slated for removal about 2.5 years earlier, and they were the height and leaning in the direction of the power line. So if they would fall, and these trees often do in heavy winds and rain and snow, they would strike that line. Now, if the trees were that height but leaning the other way, it wouldn't have been an issue. Or if they were leaning towards the power line but not of the height to reach them, it would not be an issue. And that's what PG&E crews do, is they go cruise these trees and take out the ones, and they hire private companies to do that. These were slated to be removed 2.5 years in advance. PG&E failed to do so.
Wow.
One of those trees fell on that line and started the Zog fire.
Gotcha.
There was a report. That report, when it came time in court to be presented as evidence for the manslaughter, they were not presented.
They weren't allowed, or it just didn't happen?
No. The deputy yeah. DA, Ben Hanna, did yeah. not produce the report
right.
that showed PG&E had those 2 trees slated for removal.
So he did it by omission. Then he was.
And so the judge says, I have no evidence. I have to dismiss these manslaughter charges. The judge was correct. He had no evidence because it wasn't produced.
Presented by the
It
DA,
wasn't presented.
ADA.
Now, why did the deputy DA not submit this report? Now, interesting enough, on that day in court in Shasta County, another attorney yelled out from the floor, an audience member, objecting to this. And Deputy Ben Hanna said, Your Honor, we've rest our case. You know, we have no information to enter.
Oh, my gosh.
That attorney now has been contacted by PG&E, and he's been asked to stop talking about it. And then a sum of money was paid to him.
To him to be
Wow.
To keep that quiet.
Hush
wow.
money.
And that's what happened. Shortly thereafter, as this case got wrapped up and the settlements were done, Deputy DA gets a new job with the Attorney General's office. And then shortly after, the Attorney General's office is now appointed to Shasta County Superior Court as a judge, all in a very rapid time period.
Oh, my gosh. This gets worse and worse.
It's the water.
No, it's not.
It's the water. That has a double meaning.
Now, yeah, the good news on this is I don't believe there's any statute of limitation on the manslaughter charges. So PG&E is not out of the woods yet with okay. those. And I believe that those 4 people should not be forgotten in this manner.
Amen.
Playing political games for financial gain,
right.
I think, is a crime that is unspeakable. We have forgotten about 4 people that were tragically lost because of a tree was not taken care of by PG&E,
right.
and they were not held accountable.
Yeah.
And a quick settlement happened, and all is well in Shasta County.
Yeah,
well,
no.
we've got
no.
About 45 seconds left. I'd like to thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Lori.
Yes.
Thank you, partner. This has been an amazing show. Please share this. Please share this archive. Please share this program. It goes into the archive 10 minutes after we're done. Please get it out there. This is very, very important information. If you live in Shasta County, you care about Shasta County, we need to get that done.
We need to
get that
out there. Done.
And we will make sure that we send this out to a lot of people. And make sure you have your seatbelt fastened, you three. You know?
You three.
You know what I mean?
Now, I'm sure, you know, by talking about this, various forms of retaliation will be attempted. But, you know, I've been around, pretty thick skin. There's really nothing you can do to me. You know, I've toured the inside and outside the jail, and it's not as bad as they say.
Time has come.
And
they don't have room for you anyway.
Me and Kevin have already agreed, chair cry, that I get the lower bunk.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Amen.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.